This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
In the weeks that followed the killing of George Floyd, The New Yorker published an essay about another uprising, one that followed another tragic death, and it took place more than 50 years ago.
We grew up in a two-story house in the Brownsville section of Brooklyn. The house had a balcony, and in the summer, we were able to sleep out on the balcony in the cooling air.
The essay is by Hilton Alls, a staff writer and a winner of the Pulitzer Prize. Hilton's essay is called My Mother's Dreams for Her Son and All Black Children.
The Brownsville summer of 1967 was like every other Brooklyn summer I'd experienced, stultifying. Relief was sought at the nearby Betsy Head Pool and at the fire hydrants that reckless boys opened with giant wrenches. The cold water made the black asphalt blacker in the black nights. Gossip floated down the street from our neighbors' small front porches and from stoops flanked by big concrete planters full of dusty plastic flowers. Nursing a beer or a Pepsi, the grown-ups discussed far-off places like Vietnam. So-and-so's son had come back from there all messed up, and now he was on the methadone. Then the conversation would shift to the kids. Every kid in our neighborhood was everyone else's kid. Prying, caring eyes were everywhere. Sometimes the conversation stopped, but just for a moment, as girls in summer dresses passed. Men and women alike looked longingly at those girls for different reasons as they ambled down the street, pretending to pay no mind to the fine-built boys who called to them from a distance.
Hilton, you grew up in Brooklyn with your sisters and brother and your mother who had immigrated from Barbados. Can you tell me about that environment? And your mother, she was politically active, right?
Yes. Even though I don't think that she would ever say that she was a activist, she just kind of was active. She was a person who sort of found the political in the everyday, meaning believed very strongly in the possibility of the black family and doing better and having better. My mother was a proud member of Mary McLeod Bethune's National Council of Negro Women and had attended Martin Luther King Jr.'s 1963 March on Washington. When she reminisced about that march, it was with a vividness that made her children feel shy. Sometime in the long ago, Ma had been part of history. Nonviolent organization, picket lines, and marches. All these strengthened our mother's conviction that inclusion worked, that civil rights worked, that the black family could work, especially if welfare officers and other professionally concerned people, journalists and sociologists say, paid attention to what a black mother built rather than to how she failed.
Hilton, in 1967, something happened that really changed the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. There was an uprising, or what was then called a riot. And it started in a way that was all too familiar. What happened?
There was a first a demonstration and then a riot when a young boy named Richard Ross was shot in the back by, as it turned out, a black police officer, because it had been thought or assumed that he had mugged an older white man. And that event, that murder, precipitated a two-day period of discord and sadness. Standing by my mother's living room window, I tried tentatively to ask her why our world was burning. She gave me a forbidding look. "Boy, be quiet so you can survive," her eyes seemed to say. Did I want to be another Richard Ross? One of the 100 or 1,000 Richard Rosses out there? So many questions I could not ask. Among them, had our desire for community also been reduced to rubble and ash? The chaos that night, it would last for 2 days before life went back to normal, was more vivid to my burgeoning writer's mind than what I could not see. Our mother's vivid memories of King's promise of a promised land. Where was that?
You write in your essay about the riots and the question of masculinity.
Uh-huh.
You said that to riot was a rejection of maternal silence. Talk to me about that and how you yourself fit into it.
I think that a lot of black men who are raised in matrilineal societies have to figure out not how to be men, but how to enact masculinity. And one of the things that they, and certainly I was taught, was how to be silent in order to save your life, which is don't question or contradict authority to its face, because you might get smashed, you might be sent to jail, you might be killed. And I think that one of the things that happened and happens in riots is that boys are given an opportunity to imitate the sort of violence and freedom that they see their white counterparts having. It's a way of not only separating from the mother, but a way of competing with male whiteness.
There comes a time in your essay that you're you. You're the adult you. You're Hilton Alls, who's a successful, celebrated writer, living a decent life, a creative life. And yet, even in from established people in the cultural world, there's one slight after another. And I wish you would talk about experiencing that, how often it comes, and is it totally expected by you?
It's very interesting, David, that it's the writer's ego and egotism that believes that once you write something like this, that all racism will disappear and people will behave decently. But I came to visit some friends in Connecticut, and I got out of the car to go to the grocery store, and I had my mask on like everyone else, and there were two elderly white women, and I was sort of coming up the rear, and the woman, one of the women, sort of flinched. She was startled by my presence, and she was making an effort not to be afraid. But still, in that effort, I felt great sadness, because I wouldn't be afraid if she came up to me, or my mother wouldn't be afraid. What is it in the white body that I really want to ask the question, what is it in the white body that produces that response? It is very curious to me. I've never understood it. It has nothing to do with, you know, if you want to talk about the relationship of black violence and white violence, I think white people, you know, have us beat by a mile. I don't understand why. It sort of feels like I have to ask the question back to you. I don't know why it's in that culture and in that body. It's sort of like that wonderful exchange with Toni Morrison had with Charlie Rose, where he says, well, you're celebrated, and do you still experience racism? And you can see her face turn into granite. And she says, that's not the right question. The right question is, why does it exist in you? So I'm sort of in that school. I feel it when it happens. I don't expect it. I don't go looking for it. And I think that that's partly what's assaulted is my relative innocence, my belief that as human beings we're going to, go to the supermarket together or sit down together or have a meeting or lunch together, and no one leaves the table feeling slimed. It's really, there's that wonderful Public Enemy album, Fear of a Black Planet, but I don't know what the fear is. Why wouldn't you want a black planet?
I'm talking with The New Yorker's Hilton Alls. We're at a moment when a lot of white people finally seem to be recognizing the persistence of racism and the dehumanizing effect it has. And Hilton concludes his essay by speculating on why a national uprising followed George Floyd's death and what changes in American consciousness and reality it might lead to.
You get it only when the shit happens to you too. We all know that. And now the effects of our segregated democracy are happening to you. And now you can see or understand that all along, I've been trying to get along just like you, the way Ma taught me, to be independent and help my chosen family. I've tried to make a living at something I love and to explore the intricacies of love just like you. I've lost friends and forgotten to pay a credit card bill just like you. But I wasn't allowed to be like you. And now my other is happening to you. Now degradation and moral compromise and your body breaking down are happening to you. Because Donald Trump has happened to you. OxyContin has happened to you. Broken families have happened to you. Gun violence in schools, in supermarkets, in movie theaters, at concerts has happened to you, along with riots and frustration and cops who can't pass up an opportunity to flash their guns and their batons in your presence, even as you search for home, even as the dream comes tumbling, tumbling, tumbling down.
Hilton Alls reading from his essay, My Mother's Dreams for Her Son and All Black Children. You can find it at newyorker.com.